never before have so many anti-gun bills been introduced into the Colorado legislature. And with a supermajority of Democrats in charge, they could all pass. Second Amendment scholar David Kopel is arguably the nation's greatest researcher on gun issues. So are these bills constitutional? I'm John Caldera, and this is the audio version of our television show, Devil's Advocate. You can watch that program by going to our YouTube channel, IITV, which stands for Independence Institute Television. Please subscribe and share this podcast. Enjoy. When I've got questions about the Second Amendment and what's going on in Colorado, there's only one man I trust, Dave Kopel, who has been, well, the nation's leading scholar on the Second Amendment. Dave, have you ever seen gun rights under attack more in Colorado history?
Never, not even close.
Not even close, because I remember, was it 10 years ago, we had several gun-related issues, including magazine limit, universal background check, and gun show things. Worse than that.
Well, let's see what passes out of the legislature. But the amount of hatred, really, against gun owners being expressed this session far exceeds anything else in Colorado political history. And I have a pretty good memory of Colorado political history myself from the late 80s, and actually derivatively from my father, who was a state legislator and worked for the legislative drafting office before that, starting in the late 50s. And I've written the Colorado Constitutional Law and History textbook, so I'm fairly familiar with everything going back to the Gold Rush.
Let's start off from a real basic point. I understand people are frustrated. People are scared. The King Supers, where I shop, was a site of a deadly mass shooting.
Yes.
And you know my history. I used to be a gun phobe. I hated guns. I gave money to the other side in a previous life until I started researching it and getting the emotion out. But I understand why people are so flipped out, and they just want the guns to go. They want the unicorns to come and disarm everyone. What do you say to those people who are not literate in how guns work, but they still just want a safer Colorado?
Well, just look at the war on drugs. You know, people were very upset about drugs, some of them starting in the 60s. It got to a real peak in the late 1980s. And they said, you know, drug misuse is very bad. You know, look at crack addicts, all those things. And that's definitely true. But when they turned on the heavy hand of maximal state repression on that, it often made things worse, and among other things, made things more violent.
Also worse for people who are minorities. And I look at these laws being put forward, a sin tax on guns and ammunition, meaning it's going to be harder to train with guns, it's harder to practice with guns, extra training for concealed carry, even though you have to get training now. All sorts of things that are going to make it much a liability insurance bill. You know, so people who can't afford their car insurance are supposed to get a liability insurance to protect themselves. And these are people who are often in the inner city. It sure seems to me that the Jim Crow gun laws of, you know, 150 years ago are not that much different, that these gun laws really disproportionately hurt minorities. People of the black and brown communities. Am I wrong on this one?
No, you're right about the disproportionate thing. But I'd also say that another parallel with Jim Crow, by which sort of meaning the legislative era from 1810 to about 1920 at its peak, and then it still continued on with legally mandated segregation for many decades after that, the Southern state legislatures, after the Equal Protection Clause of the 14th Amendment was enacted, no state shall deny any person the equal protections of the laws, they couldn't write gun laws that were racially specific anymore, which they had done all the time, both before and after the Civil War.
Stop there for a second. The first gun laws were directed at African Americans, weren't they?
I mean, well, you can go back all the way to 1619, then when the Virginia legislature says that blacks can't have guns.
All right. So there's a lot of racism in gun laws. So bring it to more recent times, that with the 14th Amendment, it says everybody's covered by the law.
Yeah.
Even people who are African-American.
Right. And so the legislatures have to stop writing gun laws that say, that are defined on the basis of the person's color. So they instead focus on laws that they know will most effectively disarm poor people by pricing gun ownership out of reach. And these laws are not aimed, or at least their effect is not entirely on just on black people. And black people, you know, most of them had been slaves until recently. They tended to be poor. But there were also plenty of poor whites. And the legislatures of the South also didn't mind taking guns or preventing gun acquisition poor whites.
How would they do it back then? I mean, it's very obvious now, if you're going to have sin taxes on guns, liability insurance, extra training in order to exercise your constitutional right, this is going to affect poor people a whole lot more than upper-income people. How did they do it back then if they couldn't say, we don't want guns in the hands of people of color?
Well, what some state legislatures did is they had personal property taxes, which in general are lawful. You know, we're used to paying ownership taxes on real estate that we own, and likewise on automobiles.
Right.
But it, more common back then was also personal property taxes on, you know, your whole household. You own $200 worth of furniture, you got to pay a tax on that and on all the rest of your personal property. And so besides making, say, handguns and good quality knives like Bowie knives subject to the ordinary personal property tax rates, they jacked it up higher and put special, punitively high personal property taxes on handguns, sometimes on handgun ammunitions, and on knives they didn't like, you know, Bowie knives.
So basically, isn't the Colorado legislature basically doing the same thing now? I find it so odd that progressive Democrats are the ones pushing these laws that disproportionately hurt people of color.
Your error is thinking that progressive Democrats, of as they identify today, are just an extension of what liberal Democrats used to be, which were the kind of Democrats that I grew up with, like my dad, Jerry, who served in the legislature for 22 years. And he was one of the most liberal in the legislature, but there were most Democrats in the legislature in the 60s, 70s, 80s, 90s, and even at the start of this century, were liberal overall. Liberal people are open-minded, tolerant, very into freedom of speech, and they do think about, liberal Democrats were not, you know, absolutely opposed to gun control, but what they were very concerned about was fairness. And they knew how laws that, you know, a lawyer or a person who can afford a lawyer can comply with may not work so well for somebody who, you know,
right. So runs out somebody of, who hasn't yeah. had had can't afford the lawyers, can't afford the representation, afford to go through the legal hoops. And there was a time when liberals looked out for people who were poor.
Right. Now, you can contrast that with the insurance bill, which I think is the...
Let's go through them at a time. This is a good one. Let's start off with this insurance bill. What it does is it says, in order for me to keep my guns or have guns, I also have to have liability insurance for when I hurt somebody with guns?
For a gun accident. This bill is better than some that were proposed, you know, talked about in other states, because you can't insure against an intentional act. You know, you can't buy insurance and say on your automobile, well, what if I ran my automobile through the plate glass window of a bank so I can rob it? can I get buy an insurance policy that'll cover it so that'll help the bank repair its window? And the insurance company will say, no, you can't insure against your own intentional misconduct. And that suicide would also be part of that. You can't,
the same way you can't buy a policy and off yourself the next week.
At least
2 years.
Yeah, maybe a life insurance policy might cover that, but not a homeowner's
right.
policy. So currently, any homeowner's policy you buy will implicitly insure against, explicitly will insure against accidental injuries to people on your property. They're walking up your driveway, you didn't shovel it, they slip on the ice, they get injured, they can sue because of the accident that was related to your property. Same thing for your chainsaw. You know, you're using the chainsaw in the front yard to cut wood, the chainsaw slips and, you know, injures somebody else. Even though you don't have chainsaw insurance explicitly.
But you have to be able to own a house in order to get that. And not everybody can afford renter's insurance or even has renter's insurance. So am I wrong to say that this insurance mandate is for people who can afford a house, can afford extra insurance? And it's just another way to say, poor people, we don't want you to have guns.
Well, yes. And so here's an example of that. You have your gun insurance already automatically by if you have homeowner's insurance. And likewise, if you have renter's insurance. But there are people, apparently unbeknownst to Representative Woodrow of Aurora and the others who introduced this bill, there are other people who are neither owners of homes nor renters of their homes. You know, if you had trouble and, you know, in your life and you had to come live with me in my basement.
Again,
right. And you couldn't buy renter's insurance. You'd be just living in my house. I've
right.
got the homeowner's insurance, but you, you're not the homeowner and you're not the lessor of any property. You're nothing. And so you can't buy homeowner's or renter's insurance. You know, and some other guy who's like, you know, living with a friend because that's all he can afford. Maybe the friend has rental and renter's insurance, but
does that cover
the other
me?
Guy doesn't. Well, the insurance actually might cover you. So the problem. So yes, if you come to my house and you stay there, and you accidentally cause a gun accident that injures somebody else, yes, that would be covered by my homeowner's insurance policy. But that's not what the law says. The law says you have to have your own policy, which would be a homeowner's policy or a renter's policy. And if you're not a homeowner or a home renter, then there's nothing for you to buy.
If you become homeless and you're living in your car, if you become homeless and you're living on the street with your family, or you're living someplace else, there you have.
Now you're illegal.
Right.
Now you can't own a gun because you can't get a renter's insurance policy because you're not a renter, and so it's against the law for you to possess a firearm.
I want to talk about the tax bill.
I want to talk more about this insurance bill.
All right, go ahead.
Because it's so full of poison pills.
Tell me.
Okay, well, first of all, it's going to be everybody who does follow this. Supposedly, if you have a gun, you have to have a homeowner's or renter's insurance policy. And of course, it's completely bogus because, as I said, the insurance already covers it. But if insurance companies start saying, okay, we'll put on a gun rider on our policies, then insurance records can be accessed by the government. So now we have registration of all the gun owners. But there's more. Under the bill, any law enforcement officer, anytime, can ask anyone for proof of their insurance policy.
So I'm driving down the street, they pull me over because I'm being profiled, and they can say, where's your insurance policy for the gun you have?
Right. You could, of course, you have to have the insurance policy for the car because you're driving the car and you keep it with you. And maybe you're right. Maybe you're lawfully carrying a gun in your car. Where is your insurance policy for the car? Who carries their homeowner's insurance policy around with them? And suppose me, as a lawyer, I did and say, okay, I'm going for a drive. I'll take a photocopy of my homeowner's insurance policy with me. And then the police officer looks at it and he says, fire, flood, tornado, accidents in general. I don't see anything here that says something specific about guns, which is true because the insurance policies cover all accidents involving, guns, ice, Drano, chainsaws, right, everything else. You have an accident on your property, that's covered, but it doesn't specifically say chainsaws or firearms. So here's the officer who's, not an insurance lawyer. He says, the driver doesn't say it. He handed me his homeowner's insurance policy. I read all 11 pages, didn't see the word firearm. So now I'm going to write him up for the fine he'll have to pay for not having insurance. And then maybe I'll go to court and win. But again, that's part of the discrimination. Some people with flex time jobs and high levels of education can go to court and represent themselves and maybe come out fine. But a lot of people, they don't have a job where they can get a day off from work to do some court appearance. They don't understand the legal process and they don't have $1,000 just sitting around under the, in a coffee can so they can pay for a lawyer to defend themselves from these bogus charges. And it's not just in the car. You're walking down the street. Officer can come up to you and say, do you have a gun insurance policy? Maybe I'm not concealed carrying at that moment, but if I own a gun, I have to, under this law, give my homeowner's insurance policy to the officer right then and there. So this is an incredibly sleazy trick in the bill to basically make everyone subject to the police going, show us your papers. Because the bill doesn't say the officer has to know that the individual has a gun.
This is another thing that a police officer can use for profiling or for adding charges to somebody. Again, what I find so remarkable about all this, that the same progressives who are trying to defund the police are now trying to empower the police to target minorities with many of these laws. And for time, we need to keep rolling on
some of these. But I just want to make one point.
Yeah.
The difference between people who wrongly self-identify as progressive versus classical Colorado liberal Democrats is you would have had plenty of liberal Democrats in, say 1978 or 94 said, oh, let's have a statewide gun registration. And they might have voted for a bill that did that. But to put something in the insurance code that is designed to maximize harassment of poor people and do all these sleazy things via the insurance code, they never would have stood for that because they thought their job was to protect the consumers and not to find ways to manipulate the insurance code and similar things against the most vulnerable people in society.
It is a bureaucratic trickster way to eat away at a law you don't want to take on full value. Speaking on registration, why is it that we don't like registration? Those of us who are gun owners, and let me tell you, back when I was a gun phobe, the idea of gun registration made perfect sense. We register our cars. We register all sorts of things. Shouldn't the government know where all the guns are?
Why don't we register abortions and birth control? If you don't have something to hide, what's the problem?
Because those are medical procedures. We have HIPAA for that. That's between me and my doctor.
Exactly. It's a matter of privacy.
My abortion is not going to kill somebody else. My abortion is...
only one at a time.
All right. It's not going to kill anybody else but that fetus. It's not like my abortion is going to be stolen by somebody and used in a crime. It's not like my abortion is going to go do a mass murder except that one unborn life. How can you compare abortion and just regular registration?
Because the purpose of registration is confiscation. That's what's happened in almost every country with gun registration. You, United Kingdom and England most prominently. These are the things that President Obama, Secretary of State Hillary Clinton said repeatedly, we should copy the good gun laws they have in Australia and the United Kingdom, and which is you register them and then you confiscate them. Not every single gun, but you confiscate whatever guns, whatever types the government wants to confiscate. So that's the purpose of registration. It doesn't solve crimes, because it would solve a crime if somebody, say, had their registered handgun and then they used their registered handgun to go to the bank and they robbed the bank. And then on the way out, they had so many bags of money that they accidentally dropped the handgun. And then the police find the handgun, look up who owns the handgun, go there and find the robber counting his loot. But gun crimes are overwhelmingly perpetrated with guns that were not lawfully possessed in the first place.
Every time I see one of these gun laws coming up, a political cartoon pops in my mind, or an animated cartoon. Bad guy, in the middle is a legislature, good guy. And the legislature looks at the bad guy and says, you got to stop doing this, otherwise we're going to do something bad. Like what? And he goes over and he beats the nice gun owner.
Yeah.
The guy who hasn't done a damn thing, has followed every law, and then turns back to the bad guy and says, now, have you learned your lesson?
Yeah.
No? Well, we'll give you some more. And we'll beat up the innocent guy. And as an innocent guy, I am tired of losing my gun rights for crimes I've never committed, nor will I ever commit.
But you are deserving of symbolic punishment in the view of the regressives who dominate the Democratic caucus in the legislature these days. You know, back to my dad's time in the legislature. Were they suspicious of handguns? Yes. And at the same time, they'd turn around and genuflect and say, we got nothing against rifles and shotguns. You know, those are perfectly nice things that people use for hunting and target shooting. The new culture of the gun control, gun ban movement is different. It is against gun ownership per se. Ms. Gabrielle Giffords, head of the largest anti-gun organization, did a Time Magazine did a big cover story lauding her last spring. And they asked her what she thought. And she said, no more guns, gone. And the staffer who was with her was trying to stop her. And Ms. Giffords was insisting.
She told the truth.
She forthrightly told the truth. So the fact that you own
any gun. Beto O'Rourke. Hell yes, we're coming for your guns.
The fact that you're a gun owner makes you an inherently bad person in their view. So, you know, collateral damage, you know, it's like, oh, we may not, you're bad in self. So any punishment, anything that makes your life worse is a benefit in itself.
That liberals believe these ridiculous ideas like you're innocent until proven guilty. Now you're just guilty until you're proven innocent. We're going to take your gun away. All right, for time's sake, I want to rifle a few through these. Get that? Rifle a few.
Riffle, I think, is how some people pronounce it.
Well, anyway. I wouldn't do it.
Okay.
When I go and I buy a gun and I use a credit card, and I go to Dick's Sporting Good or someplace, and I buy a gun, a new bill would say there has to be a special category for me. Why?
So they can confiscate your guns.
So they can
make banks who are the credit card issuers report transactions at firearms-related merchants. Now, at the moment, you go to Dick's Sporting Goods. Well, actually, Dick's, I think, stopped selling guns. But, you know, go to Cabela's, you know, where you can buy a boat for $35,000 or all kinds of things, you know, clothing, outdoor gear, fishing stuff. You know, it's a great superstore. But among the things they sell are firearms. So we start off with all your transactions at Cabela's, the banks having to separate them out as separate merchant category codes, and then the regulators can say, oh, you better start reporting to us suspicious transactions.
So right now I go to Cabela's, I buy a bunch of stuff and some ammunition, it all goes under the same code to the credit card company. Now Cabela's is going to have to act like the cop and go, well, there's a code for that. Now we have to have another code for this, which means the bank company.
Not quite yet. You go to Cabela's, it's general merchandise.
Right.
Is how it's coded now. You know, the same as if you go to Target.
But if this were to pass.
The bill would say every Cabela's transaction, because Cabela's sells firearms, among other things. That's what looks suspicious. And then down the line, they want to say you actually have to separate the transactions. Like, you know, here's your thermal socks. Good, you got to buy that with one credit card transaction. And then here's the ammunition. We got to make a separate transaction.
Again, another great way to profile people. And with AI and all the incredible computing power we have, it will be easier and easier to find the people who have guns. Let's keep going with these just for time's sake. Safe places. Now, Colorado has a shall issue carry permit, and we can take our guns where it's dangerous. I find it fascinating and just desperately sad that in the places where we've had mass shootings are now the places we can't carry guns. Boulder, for instance, houses of worship. Well, that's where there's been mass shootings. Stores, well, that's where there's been mass shootings. Theaters, well, that's where there's been mass shootings. As if to say, all the places that you are most danger, we're going to keep you the least defended. What does the safe storage bill do? And I know as we're talking it's going through the process.
Yeah, so the sensitive places bill, it's been considerably approved to get out of the Senate Judiciary Committee, although we'll see what happens with it. But as the bill was introduced, you're right, it creates safe zones for mass shooters. And that's what they want. They would rather, by they, I mean the gun ban lobby, and I mean Michael Bloomberg in particular, the sugar daddy of the Every Town organization. There was in Texas a couple of years ago, some guy walked into a church and started shooting at people. And one of the people in the church pulled out his own lawfully licensed carry handgun and shot the attacker and stopped the mass shooting and saved many, many lives. And Michael Bloomberg's reaction, what he said, that wasn't his job. He wasn't supposed to do that. So in the Bloomberg view, you should wait. You know, call 911, let the shooting continue for several minutes until the police show up. And then they can shoot the attacker. But the idea of an ordinary citizen shooting the attacker, Bloomberg doesn't want that. So no wonder that lobby produces bills to create safe zones for mass shooters and for criminals in general. To say that if a woman goes jogging in a municipal park at 6 o'clock in the morning, and she's been licensed, she's been fingerprinted, she's been trained, she can't carry a gun for her protection, because the gun ban lobby, they're against gun ownership in general, but what they hate the most is lawful self-defense. In their view, that's disorderly.
Why do you think they hate lawful self-defense?
Because they believe in a top-down hierarchical society of which Europe is their dream, where elites run the world for the little people and make better decisions for the little people, and the little people can make themselves.
How do you square that with Black Lives Matter? Let me go a little further with this. I think about what these laws in 2024 are going to be like 25, 50, 100 years from now. And what we're doing is we are stratifying society. Cops can have AR-15s. You cannot. Cops can carry guns in unsafe places. You cannot. One of the great things about American law enforcement is that American law enforcement are us. These are not a different group. These are not thugs. These are not people who just work for the elite. They're the guys we see at our neighborhood barbecues, and they are us. They're not soldiers. They're not there with tanks. They're us. But as we're pushing these laws, we are dividing this society into people who can have guns, even after they retire, and those who have to be defenseless. I worry what's going to happen in decades to come when this happens. And what gets me is that the people who scream Black Lives Matter, who don't trust the cops, are the ones who want to make sure that there's this different system of government agents having guns, government citizens not having those same guns. That's what scares me to death.
Well, and scares lots of law enforcement officers as well, which is why in my recent briefs in the U.S. Supreme Court and in other courts, including U.S. District Court in Colorado, I've been representing sheriff's offices, as well as the International Law Enforcement Educators and Trainers Association, the National Sheriff's Association. We could go on and on. And these law-abiding law enforcement organizations, they believe that exactly the kinds of guns that their officers and deputies carry, which is only for the purpose of lawful defense of self and others, they carry them because they're the best guns for lawful defense of self and others, and that's exactly why law-abiding citizens should be able to carry the same ones. They don't believe in that separation of law enforcement from society.
Oh, some of the police chiefs do.
Some of the police chiefs do, but they're political appointees. Sheriffs are elected, and the vast majority of rank-and-file law enforcement are on the side
because
of law-abiding
gun owners. Because they understand that the cop is carrying that gun with 17-round magazine because that's the best choice for his defense and for him to defend others. He's got an AR in the trunk of his car because he knows that's the best gun for self-defense, and soon we won't have those. And it just, let me just say it again for people who don't get it. The idea that progressives who hate the cops and think Black Lives Matter, which they do, are building a system to make sure that Black lives are completely unarmed, completely defenseless, and the cops are the ones that are going to have all the best defense weapons. Over time, this is going to make that a self-fulfilling prophecy.
Yeah, well, look at you know, Representative Epps and Representative Hernandez and their assault weapon bill. Mm-hmm. And they come in the legislature with these, and the bill they wrote, you know, these horrific libels against gun owners, claiming that what they call so-called assault weapons have no purpose other than mass killing. You know, they're not good for self-defense. They're not good for hunting. They're good for nothing except aggressive mass murder. So they claim. And then the bill they introduce says, okay, we're not going to sell any more of those except to law enforcement officers.
Who can do mass killing.
Yeah, so-called abolitionists. But that shows you the big long-term picture of them and of not people who say the slogan Black Lives Matter, but the organization itself, the new global Black Lives Matter Foundation, whose leaders have bragged that they're trained Marxists, admirers of Mao and Lenin and the rest. And so it's only abolish the police means, or defund the police, these police who are our friends and neighbors and help protect us. If you want a Marxist society, then you want a military dictatorship, because that's what every Marxist society is. And then the government's people have the guns and nobody else does.
Let's talk about so-called assault weapons. This is comical if it wasn't so very dangerous. It's the pornography description. I know it's assault weapon. When I see one, I just can't describe it. And so I look at what makes an assault weapon an assault weapon. It's just a rifle. It's just a regular semi-automatic gun, but it's the pistol grip. Remember, guns don't kill people. Pistol grips kill people. Or something to diffuse a flash afterwards, which keeps your barrel down, which makes it easier. What is that, a flash guard?
Flash suppressor.
Which lots of guns have to help you shoot better. A folding stock. A folding stock makes a gun more portable and easier to use and more adjustable for a person depending on his or her size. So the same couple could use the same gun.
Right, a telescope. That would be a telescoping stock.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, the These are all cosmetic features that help people shoot more accurately.
Yes.
Why are they dangerous?
So, like you say, the assault weapon ban in this legislative session, like every previous one that's been introduced going back to the 1989, not one of them banned guns based on how fast they fire. Not one of them banned guns on how powerful their ammunition is. It's all based on things like you said, which is like a telescoping stock. So you can, instead of having one piece of wood that's fine if you happen to be of exactly average height, you can adjust the stock for a better fit if you're taller or shorter. A better fitting stock helps you hold the gun against your shoulder more securely so that you can fire it more accurately, which is more safely. But in the view of the gun ban lobbies, that's bad. They don't want guns to be accurate. In fact, the Epps-Hernandez assault weapon bill specifically complains that these guns allow ease of use, they say, by non-experts. They'd rather have people who aren't gun experts have guns that are hard to use.
So in other words,
that are more,
they want the elderly person who's defending himself at home to use a musket that is much more difficult to use and put his own powder in than a gun that has been designed so that he can be accurate and defend himself.
But remember, self-defense is immoral. That's the government's job.
You really shouldn't be doing that. You really think that's what's behind this?
Oh, ultimately, yes. I mean, that's the big cause of the gun ban movement, going back to its foundation as official organizations in the 70s, was at the time they would say, oh, we got nothing against people having a gun for self-defense. And some of them, the more tolerant ones, might even say you can even have a handgun to use at the target range. But as for defending yourself, no, that's the government's job. You shouldn't be doing that.
The older I get, the more I see racism in it. The more that I see that this is elites saying to poorer people, screw you. I can afford the gun. I can afford the tax. I can afford the trainings. I can afford the liability. I can afford to go to the club and have better rent guns that I want. I'm going to be fine. It's you poor people, you people of color. And I'm amazed that that isn't the crux of the arguments going on in the Capitol.
Well, if these people had prevailed in, or their ancestors, in southern states in, say, 1950, then the civil rights movement would have been impossible. Because in Charles Cobb, who's a professor at Brown University and was, you know, very involved as an activist in the South in the 60s, explained that at a time when the Ku Klux Klan and other domestic terrorist organizations were either tolerated by local law enforcement or actually heavily overlapped with local law enforcement, the reason the civil rights workers in the South could stay alive to do voter registration and things like that was because the Southern black community was very heavily armed and they could deter attacks by these criminals, these terrorist white supremacists. And you have many, many people from that era who have written about the fact that it was only the gun ownership that, you know, maybe as a white civil rights worker coming from Yale University, like my lawyer friend Don Cates did, he didn't go down as a gun guy, but he found himself protected by a bunch of black people in the community with guns, and he then went on to become a civil rights advocate on many fronts, including for the right to arms. And so if the progressives, self-identified, had their way back in the olden days, we'd still have Jim Crow with us, because the Klan officially, semi-officially tolerated violence and police violence against the civil rights workers would have triumphed. And there would have been no way to fight back. And in fact, that's what did happen in the South during when Reconstruction ended, when there were black former slaves being poor had a lot fewer firearms, and the ones they did got confiscated by the Klan the first time they came into the community. So these people saying, no guns for self-defense, you can only defend yourself with the government. We want the government wants to know everybody who's got any gun. That's exactly the kind of thing that would have prevented the Civil Rights Revolution in the first place.
We haven't talked about the tax, the sin tax.
Yeah.
11% sin tax on guns and ammunition.
Yeah.
Again, meaning that poor people can't buy a gun and they can't practice with a gun in order to be proficient. Where does the money go?
Well,
and if it's a tax, don't we get to vote on it?
We may get to vote on it, yes. I think that's what the proposal is. It would actually go to a referendum. Since the 1930s, the federal government has put an 11% excise tax at the manufacturer to wholesaler level that is used to promote conservation, the conservation of game species, and it's called the Pittman-Robertson Act. And now it goes for many, it benefits conservation in general, not just game species. And it's also used to promote gun safety, such as paying for target ranges or state-sponsored hunter safety training in some places. So that tax is used to enhance the exercise of the right to arms. The anti-gun lobbies say, well, you know, we'd actually prefer, as some people have proposed, 500% or 100% tax, but what we think we can get away with courts these days might be, let's just have a state parallel to the 11% federal excise tax. Now, one difference is the state of Colorado, with its sales tax, is already taxing you
3.9%.
Plus the state and local.
But so, local additions, it could be up to 10% in certain places.
So you're already paying up to a 10% tax when you buy any product, including firearms or ammunition in the first place. And then we'd layer 11% more on it. So now you end up with just the local taxes being 20%. And that's to be used not to make the exercise of the right to arms better, safer, you know, more ranges for practice and training, having opportunities for responsible hunting, but to attack the right to arms, to pay for anti-gun propaganda and on like that.
Another bill would say that while people who sell guns have to have a federally licensed permit, an FFL, Federal Firearms License.
Yeah.
They're saying, well, that's nice. That's terrific. Now we should do it on the state level too so that they get to pay twice.
Yeah.
Same sort of thing.
Well, right. And it starts with $400 for a one-year license with an unlimited ability for the government without ever going back to the legislature to jack up that to as high as it wants. You know, $700 next year, $3,000 in a few years.
Which, if I were Cabela's, I'd go, that's not a bad thing. We can swallow it, but the small mom-and-pop shop, put them out of business. Or the guy who does it over his kitchen table.
Precisely. It's to put out of business the guys who are actually the most, the best and the most responsible gun sellers. If you buy your firearm from a guy who, you know, he has it's a part-time thing for him. He's got some other job, but he sells several dozen firearms a year to people in his gun club, friends of people in his gun club, things like that. That's the guy you want to go to who's really going to be able to give you good advice and say, oh, you know, I've got a rifle, but now I'm ready to get a handgun. I'm thinking of getting a carry permit. And that guy will take the time to sit down and help guide the buyer to just the right gun for that particular type of buyer. It's to drive them completely out of business. But again,
well, the teenager at Cabela's will be the one to give you that advice. This is just to harass and harangue gun owners and gun dealers. It is hateful legislation. It is pure hate.
Right, and these are the same people who go around patting themselves on the back for tolerance, which is just so false. I mean, they're tolerant of their political allies and really aggressively hostile to everybody else.
We should mention this is all happening with the background of a Republican bill that would have made gun crimes more punishable, higher sentences for gun crime.
Gun theft in particular.
Gun theft, and that got shot down.
Okay, so let's say, yeah.
I just want to think about this. So again, they don't want to beat up the bad guys who are stealing guns anymore. They want to beat up the good guys who have been responsible.
That's right. And that got defeated on party lines early in the legislative session. So if you go steal somebody's, you know, $3,000 very high-end hunting rifle, that's a serious offense because it's $3,000 worth of property. But if you go steal from a poor person some gun that might have cost $350 when they bought it, and now, you know, it's maybe worth $200.
Ruger Security 9, 9mm, $325. Great, reliable self-defense weapon.
Right. And that's, you steal that firearm, oh, that's not even a felony. You know, you can just walk away with that, probably get out on bail.
Get a ticket.
5 minutes later. And of course, that encourages gun theft because on the black market, one of the best things to sell is a firearm. The black market is the overwhelming supplier of crime guns. So all these people who are performing their supposed identification as gun safety advocates don't want to do anything about the theft of firearms and their sale to criminals.
Need to wrap this up, but what should people do? In other words, I've got two questions. What should people do right now? What should they do for their own protection before it becomes illegal? And will the courts save us? Those are three questions, and I'm going to ask you to put the gas on it.
Buy firearms and ammunition as you find appropriate for protection of yourself and your family, and get guidance from other more experienced people if you have questions.
So it's a good time to stock up.
Yes, because who knows what's coming. And there are other, you know, just market forces that make it a good time to stock up now rather than later. Second, stay involved and get involved. You can start with a group like the Colorado State Shooting Association, which is the best place to go to get networked with firearms trainers. Maybe you can even go to a target shooting competition and, you know, have some fun and camaraderie.
But for the immediate threat,
yeah.
People really need to talk to their legislators.
Yes, they do.
Particularly swing votes like Dylan Roberts, who sits on the Judiciary Committee and is going to be the decider on a lot of these.
And besides thinking about the swing votes, maybe you don't live in a swing district, keep on contacting the governor, who is by far the most conservative elected statewide official we have in Colorado.
That is the most terrifying thing you've said so far.
And, well, Governor Polis, you know, we've both known him since the late 1990s. He's not a hater of gun owners.
He keeps signing bills to criminalize
us. He goes along with it in a cynical political way, but he's got no personal animus against gun owners. So the more he hears from people on the civil rights side, the more that might incline him to do the right things sometimes, which he has done, including last session working behind the scenes to make terrible bills somewhat less bad.
Will the courts come and save us?
Perhaps on some issues, not on everything.
What will they not save us on?
I think the best chance of getting saved is on the way the Safe Zones for Criminals bill, as that was introduced, has a lot of parallels with things that were introduced and passed in places like New York and New Jersey, and some of those provisions have been held unconstitutional. The assault weapon bans are ultimately going to have to be decided by the Supreme Court.
When is that going to happen? There's enough of them brewing.
There's enough of them conceivably next Supreme Court term or the one after that, if the court wants to do it. You know, remember they had, after they decided the McDonald case in 2010, it took them a dozen years to do another major Second Amendment case with Bruin on the right to carry. So it would be nice to say the courts are always going to protect us, you know, on a free speech matter. you used to be able to have a lot of confidence on something like that. On firearms, maybe, maybe not.
Get involved. People want to get your work. Where do they go?
DaveKopel.org, DaveKopel.org, and on Twitter, at Dave Kopel.
@DaveKopel. Dave, thanks for everything you do for us.
Thank you.
If you've enjoyed this episode of Devil's Advocate, I hope you'll share it with a friend, and I hope you'll subscribe and follow the show. We have new ones released weekly. Remember, this audio was taken from our TV show. To watch it, just search the letters IITV for Independence Institute TV on YouTube for this and many other great conversations.